can change everything about you, even now. So this is what I want to do is for this is going to be our theme for a year, is my hope, that every lesson is centered around following Jesus more closely. And what I love is that this is a theme where we can follow Jesus in many different places and in many different ways in Scripture. You know, we may follow Jesus to the well and study the woman at the well, or follow Jesus to grace and compassion and study through 1 John. It can really fit into whatever we want. So just be prepared. We're going to follow Jesus. My goal is that by the end of year one, we've come to know each other more, but we've also come to grow closer to Jesus as a church wherever we're at. And so that's our goal, and that's where we're going to begin. So we're going to start our journey together in Luke chapter 5. And we're going to start in, we'll just start in verse 1. Now, I just, side note, my Bible, you know, you've got your go-to Bible that you use a lot. Well, this weekend, I pulled my Bible out of my backpack that I carry around, and it happened where it came apart. So, if I'm talking, you know, about to read my text, and all of a sudden my Bible ends up on the floor, just give me a moment and we'll recover. I've got to get it rebound. Luke chapter 5, verse 1. One day as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret with the people crowding around him, and they were listening to the word of God, Jesus saw at the water's edge there were two boats left there by the fishermen. I love this part of the story where he says they were fishermen and they're washing their nets. And he got into one of the boats that belonged to Simon and asked him to put out a little from the shore. And he sits down in the boat and teaches people on the shore. And I love that picture of Jesus. And then verse 4, when Jesus finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out. Now listen, this is huge because this is the first encounter that Peter ever has with Jesus. And in this moment, Jesus looks at him and says, his first phrase, go out into the deeper water. Go deeper than where you are. And I think that that's the same call that Jesus has to us the first time we see him is go out into deeper water. He's not calling you to stay in the shallows. He's calling you out into the deep. And so he says, put out into deep water. Let down your nets for a catch. And Simon answered and said, Master. Now, Simon, they're professional fishermen. They haven't caught anything. Sounds like my fishing trips. And they're tending their nets and washing them and cleaning them, which I'm sure was a tedious job and a long job. But Jesus has asked them, go back out into the deep and put your nets back down again. And this, to Peter, would be kind of a crazy idea. It's going to take a lot more energy, a lot more time. It's a big, huge inconvenience that Jesus is asking of Peter. And so he says, verse 5, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I will let down the nets. When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that the nets began to break. And they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and to help them. And they came and filled both boats up so full that both of the boats start to sink. I would love to have been a part of a fishing trip like that, you know. I was pretty proud of my last fishing trip, and I caught a little one about like this. And my little brother was making fun of me the whole time about that as he caught a pretty nice-sized catfish. I'm a bad fisherman. I am. I didn't think there was an art. You just throw your pole out there and you just reel them in when you feel them, right? Like, it seems that simple. But my brother-in-law, you know, from Louisiana, all sorts of fishermen. I'm sure it's the same way around here. And my brother-in-law and I, remember we went out on a fishing trip together. We're using the same bait in the same locations. He catches about 6 or 7. I don't catch a thing. And I felt a ton of bites, but I couldn't reel them in. So there's an art to it. Anyway, I would love to have been a part of this fishing trip. It's never happened for me yet. I'm waiting for the day that I catch so many, the boats begin to sink. And Simon Peter, verse 8, when he saw this, he fell down at Jesus' knees. Here it is, his first interaction with the Lord. He realizes in this moment that this is something special. This guy is not just an ordinary guy. There's something different about this man. And so he falls down. His first interaction with the miracle of Jesus is to fall down on his knees. And he says, get away from me, Lord. Why? I'm sinful. I love Peter. I think we all relate to Peter so well, I believe. I know I do. In this moment, his first reaction with grace and mercy is he sees it and it's too good for me. That's his thought. I get away, Lord. You're too holy. There's something different about you, and I'm not worthy to be in your presence. And I'm here to tell you that that is the biggest battle in our minds as Christians today is the belief that I'm not good enough for that. I'm not worthy of that. And when it comes to Jesus and His grace, Satan is so good at placing those whispers in our minds and in our hearts that say, oh, He's too good for somebody like you. Do you know what you've been doing, where you've been, who you are? Jesus is too holy for a guy or a gal like you. And so, back in our text, verse 9, for he and all his companions, they were astonished at the miracle of the catch of fish that had taken place. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. And then Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you're going to catch men. And so they pulled their boats up on the shore and they left everything. And notice these words, they followed him. In Mark's account of the story, which we're not going to read right now, Jesus does. He makes that request to Peter and James and John in that moment. He looks at them and he says our phrase, I want you all to say it with me, follow me. And that's what Jesus says. That was his first request to them, to follow me. And I love their response. They left what? They're willing to leave every single thing in their life and to follow Jesus. They left their profession, they left their family, they left everything that they had, and they're ready to go. And what I love is that Jesus doesn't tell them where they're going. He just tells them who they're going with, and that's expected to be enough. And I think that's the same way, right? That's when you read those scriptures that say, walk by faith and not by sight. Jesus is telling you, I'm not telling you where you're going to go. I'm just telling you, I'm going to be with you the whole way. And that's good enough for people like us. Amen? And so that's the beginning of this journey. Peter begins to follow Jesus, and he's right there with him. For 3 years, this happens. I want you to turn now to Matthew 26. We're going to look at a lot of text this morning. Matthew 26. So Peter begins following Jesus, leaving everything, and he's right there with Jesus for 3 years, learning under him, watching him, and growing closer to him. And then we get to Matthew 26, and I want you to look at verse 31, I'm going to go ahead and start reading as you're turning. Matthew 26, verse 31, Jesus told them, all the disciples who were gathered together in this moment, this very night you will all fall away on account of me, for it's written, and then he quotes an Old Testament prophecy here that predicts that this night's going to happen. I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered, verse 32, but after I've risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee. And Peter replied. So here he is. It's been 3 years that we saw the beginning. And here's where we are now, 3 years later. Peter replies, even if all the rest of these people in this room, even if all the rest fall away, I will never fall away. I'm not going to, Jesus. If everybody else leaves, if everybody else is taking off and denying you and leaving, I'm not going to do that. I'm with you all the way. And then 34, Jesus says, I tell you the truth, this very night before the rooster crows, you're going to disown me 3 times. But Peter declared and said, even if I have to die with you, I will never. And now he gets specific, right? Like at the beginning, he's saying, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to leave you. And now he gets even more specific and says, specifically, I'm never going to what? I'm never going to deny you. I'm never going to leave you. And specifically, I won't deny you, how many times have you said something like that? Jesus, I promise I'm never going to do that. Mom, Dad, I promise I'm never going to do that. I will never do that. And all these other people, I know they're doing that, but not you. You can trust me. Jesus, you will never find me here. My family, my father was this way, and I will never be that way. Mother, I will never be that way. I will never do. You won't find me here, I promise. And that's where Peter's at. And he gets specific with what he's not going to do. I won't deny you. And now flip the page for some of you. We're going to verse 69. You've heard this many times. I think it's interesting that we have a rooster, apparently, right back here at this house. I'm literally hearing the rooster crow in the mornings as I'm walking into church. And it was ironic that I'm coming to this text. So look, verse 69. Now Peter was sitting in the courtyard, and a servant girl came up to him, and she said, you were also with Jesus of Galilee. But he denied it before them all, saying, I don't know what you're talking about. So there's one. Verse 71, then he went out to the gateway where another girl, everybody say another girl, another girl saw him and said to the people there, this fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth. And he denied it again. This time, I want you to notice the progression here. I don't know if you've ever noticed it before. The first time he denied him, now this time he denies him how? With an oath. So now it takes to that step further. Now, this is not like cursing or swearing. This is like you place your hand on the Bible in court, you know, and I swear to tell the truth and nothing but the truth, so help me God. And that's what this is. It's an oath. I promise, I don't know him. I swear, I don't know him. And so he's swearing this oath. That's two. And then a little while after, verse 73, those standing there went up to Peter and they said, surely you are one of them, for your accent gives you away. And then he began to call down curses and to swear an oath. And he's saying, I don't know him. And he didn't. Now it's strike three, okay? And so he's having a bad night, isn't he? And this next group, he comes in, and now it's, I don't know him, and he's calling down curses, and he's swearing. He's swearing oaths and swearing words, and it's all happening in this moment. And you see the progression that it's taken, and that's what happens with us when we're caught in sin. It starts off small, but sooner or later, you just begin to have to defend yourself so strongly. You notice that progression with Peter, and now it's gone from tentatively, oh, I don't know him, to, I'm telling you. You ever been there? I have been there. And I know that you have too. The reason I know that is because Jesus told me that you've been there. And so, this is a moment, we're not looking down on Peter in this moment. That's not our goal. Our goal is to say what happened and what happens with us and where does this story go? And I began to think, you know, Peter, how did you go from there? Because it's the same chapter, it's the same night, and just a second ago, he's looking over at Jesus and he's saying, I'm never going to leave you. I'll die with you if I have to. To now this? Look at the extremes. And I've looked at my life so many times and so many of people's lives who I've been in ministry with. And it's like I start out so great and so on fire for Jesus and I'm following him. You remember the time that you were converted? You remember your story when you were baptized into Christ? How excited you were? And then something's happened over the years, and now suddenly I want you to look at verse 58 of our text. This is when it hit me, how much I relate with Peter in this moment. Verse 58, it says, but Peter followed, how? Look at your text, at a distance. Peter followed at a distance. You see, what's happened is he started out close, and he's right there with Jesus at the beginning in Luke chapter 5. He left everything to follow with Jesus, and he's going to be right there with him. But now what's happened is over the years, something has happened to where now Peter is following at a distance. And so often that resembles my life. You know, I don't think faith is always, you know, if this is where God wants us to be, you know, and here I am. I don't think faith is always just a constant journey forward. You ever heard that it's, you know, sometimes it's like a two steps forward, one step back kind of a thing. I don't even think faith is like that anymore. I've kind of changed my view on that again. Here's what I think faith is kind of like. I think it's kind of one of these things where you're just kind of, you're all over the place and you're heading there, and sometimes you're dancing around. It's a journey with him. And some of you this morning are looking at yourself like I've looked at myself at many times, and you look at where you were with Jesus at one point, and man, when I was at that camp or at that retreat or when I was at that conference or I was that one preacher was here, I used to be so plugged in, but then that preacher left, and we've got all sorts of great excuses, but for whatever reason it is, now we look at who we are compared to who we used to be, and we are a lot farther away from Jesus than we once were. And we don't know how to come back because there's this thing called pride that eats at me and it eats at you sometimes too. And we say, you know what? If I go back, people are going to ask me the horrible question. Where have you been? And it eats at us and it eats at us and it eats at us. And Jesus, and Peter is hearing this rooster crow in the next verse, back in verse 74. He calls down the curses. He says, I don't know him. And immediately, it's one of the saddest scriptures, immediately the rooster crowed. And another text tells us that Jesus looks over at Peter in that moment, and they make this, they have this moment of this eye contact. And I used to think that Jesus was looking over in anger. That was when I was young. Then I evolved and I thought, you know what? It's, you know, what's worse when you're, what's worse? Your parents are angry at you or they're disappointed in you. Right? And so then I was like, that's what it is. It's a look of disappointment. But you know what? As I've continued to follow Jesus, this is where I'm at today, and I'm sure later it'll change, but I think it was a look of forgiveness. I think he was looking with eyes of grace to Peter, but Peter missed it. And he goes out, and our text says that he wept bitterly. The rooster crowing was too much. The rooster crowing was too much, and there's this text. I don't know if you've ever noticed this before, but I want you to look in John chapter 21 as we're getting this full glimpse of the story. Thank you for jumping around with me everywhere. But I want you to see this whole story with Peter, because in John 21, Peter says this verse that was confusing for a little while until you really think about it. And he says, I believe it's verse 3, I'm going out fishing. He looks to the disciples who are with him and he says, I'm going fishing. And what kind of fishing is he talking about now? See, Jesus had already changed the profession, or he changed the fish. When Jesus called him to follow me, he said, you're going to be catching men and not fish anymore. But Peter says in this text, after all this has gone down, I'm going fishing. And he's talking about, I'm going back to who I used to be and what I used to do. Because the guilt of what he has done and how he let Jesus down is eating away inside. And at this point, he can't take the guilt anymore. I'm not worthy. And isn't it funny how after 3 years of following Jesus, Peter is right back where he started. Because he started by saying, as soon as he experienced Jesus' grace, he said, get away from me, I'm a sinful man. And here he is again saying, I'm going back. I was never worthy in the first place to follow Jesus. It's a sad moment, but man, how many of you can relate with something like that? Because that hits me right between the eyes. There's so many times in my life I've been like, man, I'm so on fire. And then I find myself right back where I used to be. And I go, what am I not? And you start questioning yourself. Do I love Jesus? You know, am I really a true Christian? Is this what it's all about? And you start having doubts in your own faith. And then it may even take a road that leads you all the way back to the very beginning. And sometimes you might even find yourself, because you're so distanced from Jesus, even though you used to be close, you may even say phrases like, I don't even know. You wouldn't say it out loud, but you would think it in your heart. I don't even know if I believe this stuff anymore. Because there are a whole lot of people where it takes that road. And some of you in this room right now are feeling that, and you're thinking that, and you're going, I'm not even sure if this is all even real. Because isn't Jesus supposed to help me and get me through? Why am I still so far away from him if this is the case? So then you're going, either I'm a bad Christian and I'm just not doing things right, or this stuff isn't real and you're trying to figure this thing out. But here's the solution that we all come to is, he's too good for me. I'm not good enough. And sometimes we as a church, we make it worse for them as they step back in, and instead of greeting them with a hug and saying, I'm so glad you're here, come sit by me, our first response is, where have you been? And I've said that phrase many times myself. And I want you to notice what happens. I want you to notice this. I may be going over, but it's our first one, all right? I'll learn to tamper it a little bit as we go, all right? I'm sorry to our children's ministry, because I know it hurts them. And so I'll work on this. I will be better, but I'm going to finish this morning. So it says verse 4, or let's go back to verse 3. Peter says, I'm going fishing. I'm going back to who I was. So, and they said, we're coming with you. We're going too. Because was Peter the only one that denied Jesus that night? Was he the only one that left Jesus? He said, you're all going to stumble on account of me. Remember our verse? And so they are all feeling this guilt. Peter's just the one that we see the most of, and we know his heart in this moment. And so they said, we're coming too. And so they've been fishing all night and they haven't caught anything. And then early in the morning, verse 4, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples didn't realize it was Jesus. And Jesus calls out to them. They're about 100 yards out into the lake now. And so Jesus calls out to them and says, hey, have you got any fish? And they don't recognize who it is. You see what's happening here? Jesus is doing the same thing again. He's doing the same miracle he did in Luke chapter 5 at the beginning of Peter's ministry. And here he is in John 21 at the end of everything, at the end of the whole book. He's doing the same miracle. I can see Jesus. I bet he was just so excited to do this. That's my thought. I think he's got a sense of humor in this moment, you know, as he's standing on that shore. Can't you see it? Yeah, you can see it. He's standing on this shore and he looks out and he says, oh yeah, they're out there. There they are. I see them. Okay. Oh, this is going to be good. Hey, Peter, you caught anything yet? No. They call back, look at your checks. No. They answered. Verse 6, he said, well, throw your net on the other side. And you're going to find some. And when they did, they were unable to haul in the net because there was such a large number of fish. If you look later in the text, it tells you there was 153 fish. And the fish are so big the nets begin to break. Verse 7, when the disciples whom Jesus loved, John turns to Peter in the boat and he says, wait a second. We've been here before, Peter. You remember this? You know what? That's Jesus on the shore. He's doing the same miracle again. And the text says that Peter had dove into the water and he's swimming 100 yards to get to the shore of Jesus. And so Peter comes up out of the water, and Jesus is there on the shore. And Peter, man, he's right back. I love the extremes of Peter, don't you? You know, he's either all in or all away. It's black and white, you know. And sometimes that's not really good way to live. But, man, we relate, don't we? And so he's diving in. He's swimming to Jesus. He comes up out of the water, and Jesus is already there on the shore. And he's got a little campfire. I'm not going to read the text. You can read it. He's got a little campfire, and he's already got fish on the campfire. And they're already cooking. And he says, hey, look, I've got this meal right here. Are you hungry? Yeah, I know you're not able to catch any fish, but I'm powerful enough to do it for you. I've already got them here. Did Jesus have a fishing pole? Did Jesus dive into the water? How'd those fish get there? Because I'm Jesus, and I can do things that you can't do. And when you think that you're not good enough, I am good enough. I knew what I was dying for on the cross. I know what I paid for because I bought it with my blood, and it was a high price for me. I gave everything I had so that we could be here this morning in Leander worshiping, and instead you're ashamed and guilted by who you're not. It was never about who you are, and it's always been about who I am. And Jesus is there on the shore, and he's already got the fish ready. And then right after this is that moment, and you need to read this text on your own, where Jesus looks over at Peter and he says, Peter, do you love me? Peter says, yeah, I love you. Remember this? Peter, do you love me? And he asks him again. And Peter says, well, yeah, Lord, you know I love you. Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know all things. You know I love you. And then it hits him. Jesus is asking the same amount of times that Peter denied. And do you think Peter made that connection? If we make that connection 2,000-something years later, don't you know Peter made that connection in that moment? Because this is the first interaction and first conversation that Peter's had in depth with Jesus since he's risen. The last thing he's seen of Jesus is that look in his eyes. And it's haunted him. And in this moment, Jesus is trying to say, I know what I bought, and I love you, and I forgive you. I want you to look at this text right here. Look at this. Verse 19. And Jesus, right after he got done saying this, saying, I love you. Or do you love me? Excuse me. Verse 19. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death that Peter was going to die to glorify God. And then he said to him, say it with me, follow me. He looked at him, and he has now given the same invitation for Peter that he gave for him at the very beginning of his journey. The same invitation, and the invitation is, come on, follow me. But Jesus, look at who I am and where I've been, and look at all the horrible things I did. And I did things I said I would never do, and maybe what's worse is that I did the things I said I would never do again. Isn't that where we are so often? And yeah, I know, Jesus, we were really close and we were pretty tight, but I've been following you at a distance. He says, I know that you love me. I know that you've been following me at a distance. And my grace is still good enough for those of you who have gotten complacent in your faith or disappointed in your faith. And you've prayed prayers where I pray that this person will live. I pray that this thing will happen. I pray that this will come true. And he didn't answer those prayers, so we think in our earthly minds, and so we believe and start to blame God, and now there's been this anger at Him, and His response, even in those moments, follow me. Come on. And some of you are sitting in here and you're worshiping this morning, and you hear a little, you know, you hear that rooster. And he's crowing, and that rooster is saying, you're not good enough. There's no way Jesus can want you. Look around this room. You see all these people in here in their nice outfits, and man, they look so sharp and they're so well-dressed. And look at what you were doing this morning before you came here. Look at what you said. Look at, you're not good enough. And some of you are trying to worship and take communion, and all you can think about is the things that you've been doing. Or maybe some of you are thinking about the thing that you want to do as soon as this service is over, but you don't want anybody else to know what's going on in your life. And the call for Jesus is still the same for you. But our minds hear the rooster. But Jesus is saying, you don't have to listen to the crowing of the rooster, because I've been resurrected and I'm here to give you a brand new start. And that's what he's trying to tell you and tell me this morning. And his invitation for you is the same as it was for Peter all those years ago. He's standing on your shore this morning, on your beachfront, as you're out there fishing and you're trying to live and you're not catching anything and life isn't working for you, and maybe you're tending your nets and trying to clean them, and it's just been a horrible, horrible time of life for you. And Jesus is there. And he's saying, throw your net on the other side. I've got this. And when you don't catch enough, I've already got them on the fire. Come, follow me. Follow me. And so listen, I don't know where you are this morning, but we're all somewhere. And here's what I know. There shouldn't be a single person in this room, myself included, who doesn't walk out of here in response to this invitation. You know, and I'm not asking that every person come down forward. Although we're going to, you know, I'll be down here. We'll have a couple of elders down here. And if you need to respond for something, we're going to be here for you. And we're going to have some elders, I believe, in the back as well. And if you don't feel like you want to come and talk about it because you don't want everybody to know just yet, that's okay too. Don't feel guilty about that. We've got some people in place who can pray with you in the back. Whatever you need, though, I pray that you don't walk out of these doors the same as you walked into them. I hope you walk out of here saying, I'm ready to follow Jesus. And that may take me to an uncomfortable place. It may take me to a place where I don't want to do that. I don't want to get involved in that. I don't want to be involved in that. You know, but Jesus isn't telling you where he's going. He's just telling you who he's with. And he says, follow me. And so I pray, even if you've been the one that's at a distance and you say, I'm not who I should be, and you hear that rooster crow and you've been the one that's sitting there thinking those things in your mind this morning, because I know you're out there, I'm speaking to somebody. If that's you, don't leave here without responding to that invitation. And if you've never made the decision to follow Christ, if you're sitting in here and you've never been baptized into him and you've never started that journey, what a better time than to do that today. If there's anything we can help you with, won't you come while together we stand and sing.